An animated book opens and a city block rises from its blank pages. A low view moves down a main street, settling outside a movie theater. Illuminated by blinking lights, the marquee reads, Amazon Studios. Kinetic lines draw out a variety of scenes.
In the 20th century, if you wanted to know your neighbors, you moved to the suburbs. If you wanted to become an addict, you moved to New York. Now, everything's upside down. The junkies are in the burbs, and the building next door is a fucking kickball league. It was art against commerce, and commerce won. The kids think the only place to find art is in a gallery, and the only place to find romance is confessing your love in the rain, like in the movies. But it's messier than that. No, there's always mess. It's safe here now, but there's still urban decay. It's just migrated into the dinner parties of the Upper West Side. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are filled with passionate intensity. Yeats said that, but so did Lou Reed, quoting him live at the Bottom Line. Lou Reed's gone, and so is the Bottom Line. It's probably a soul cycle, the only soul the city has left. Everyone's pretending it's all okay, but that's a lie. Something's missing, and we all feel it, including Thomas Webb. He thought he had the answer, and her name was Mimi.
In an art gallery.
1976. The city was dirty, crime-ridden, and broke.
It was the center of the creative universe.
New York's lost its soul. The most vibrant neighborhood at the moment is Philadelphia.
I like that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Where'd you lift that from?
I didn't. It's mine.
Oh, that's good.
So, will you come with me tonight?
No. Your mom's last dinner party made me feel invisible.
I know, but we were invisible together.
If you don't like it, then you don't go.
I have to go. My mother's unstable. Throwing dinner parties is how she medicates.
Yeah, so what about the lithium and Xanax? Not to mention the nicotine and Shiraz.
Semantics.
Standing close to Thomas, Mimi glances off.
I have to tell you something.
Yeah?
Yeah. I might be going to Zagreb.
Where?
Zagreb. It's in Croatia. So Helmut Graf, he runs a workshop there. And I found out that I can transfer my credits to NYU.
That's terrible.
Why? No, why is that terrible?
Because you're the only thing in my life that I'm settled on.
Thomas, what do you think is happening? Between me and you, what do you think this is?
August 8th. August 8th, I think August 8th was real.
It was amazing. But it was just one night. I mean, Nick was playing LA. I was vulnerable. We were both on Molly. I thought I was a pirate.
Thomas lowers his gaze.
And it was just one night.
Well, I'm crazy about you.
And I'm crazy about you, but...
But don't say as friends.
Why? Why is that so bad?
Because pretty girls like to recruit their rejections and they call them friends.
Wow.
The bespectacled young man turns away. He gives Mimi a pointed look, then walks off. The short-haired young woman stares after him, then walks in the opposite direction. Thomas rushes to follow her. Cut to black. A title appears, The Only Living Boy in New York. On a crowded sidewalk, Thomas strolls with his headphones on.
For Mimi, Thomas was like the new New York. No danger, no deliverance. It made him nurturing and too boring to fall in love with. Mimi thought Thomas was a boy without mystery. Thomas agreed. But all that was about to change.
On the subway, Thomas gives up his seat to an older woman. Later, he walks past buildings. Entering an apartment complex, he opens a mailbox.
Hey,
A grizzled, gray-haired man sits on the stairs watching Thomas.
Anything worth opening?
Just pills and junk.
WF. WF Gerald. I just moved into 2B.
Thomas Webb.
Why so troubled, Thomas?
Excuse me?
I know that color of stress. It's much brighter than job issues, more subdued than possible disease.
Huh.
Sorry, I'm being rude.
No, I mean, I'm having a bad day.
Oh? What's her name?
Thomas smiles.
It's Mimi.
Mimi. Derived from Wilhelmina. It means resolute protector.
There you go.
What is it that you like about this, Mimi?
You're a psychiatrist?
No.
You ask psychiatrist questions.
Maybe I can help. Maybe I can help you get Mimi to sleep with you.
Well, how do you know she hasn't already?
WF grins and lowers his head. He throws up his hands. Shaking his head, Thomas approaches the staircase.
It's nice meeting you.
He jogs up past the older man.
Well, why don't you let a new neighbor help you out, huh? What do you like about Mimi? I'm in 2B!
WF gazes up the stairs, then rests his head in his palm. In his apartment, Thomas lies on the bed.
Catch a boat to England, baby.
He sits up and replaces his glasses on his face.
Wherever I have gone.
Shaking his head, he walks off. In apartment 2B, WF answers his door. He beckons and Thomas enters, speaking emphatically. Now, they sit in a sparsely furnished room. WF pours wine into a glass sitting on the floor.
Send out for whiskey, baby. Send out for gin.
Where did you meet her?
There's this bookstore called The Pale Fire.
Yeah.
It's named after John
Shea's 999-line poem, Nabokov.
Right. Well, they sell rare vintage books in there, and I'm into that. I just read enough to be in path, and Mimi works there. She gave me the greatest recommendations. You know, she's putting herself through NYU's writing program. She reads a book a week. She's
polishing her brain. Beautiful.
Incredibly beautiful. Like she's direct from God, you know? On second generation, if that makes sense.
Complete sense.
You know, we get each other. The problem was, is that she has this boyfriend, Nick, and he's in that band Fahrenheit 185.
The exact temperature it takes to cook heroin properly.
Holding his drink, WF goes to a table.
Let's see what we got.
He plays a tape in a portable recorder.
Yeah.
He returns to his seat.
Anyway, so Nick goes on tour. Mimi's now available and we're hanging out more. We end up spending a magical night together. Mm. August 8th. And then nothing. All goes platonic.
How old is Mimi?
She's 22, she just turned 22.
She's young. She's at an age where defense mechanisms are very strong. Well, despite her outer veneer, she's ruled by fear. Like so many of us at that time, you know, what you need to do, just make her afraid of something more than being with you in that way.
Which is?
Not being with you.
But how? How am I supposed to do that?
Let life take over. Find a window, then pounce.
Thomas narrows his eyes and grins.
That's it? That's your sage neighborly advice? I have my money back.
Thomas. Is it Thomas or Tom?
It's Thomas.
Not Tommy?
No, never.
No. Thomas, you're not giving life enough credit. The unpredictable forces of humanity.
My life is not unpredictable. My life is conventional. My life is boring.
No, it's as random as it is deliberate. As funny as it is tragic. Yours is no exception. I got it pissed.
Nighttime. At a dinner party, a middle-aged woman sits at the head of the table. Thomas and others sit with her.
Dinner parties were Judith's safety blanket. A table full of artists took her mind off herself. The swirl of distraction, seating plans, gossip, food, anything to keep away the dread. They were the perfect antidote to her childhood dinners, the silences, the drunken outbursts. Artists came to New York from all over, and she always took them in, clinging to the illusion of an open, happy family.
Do you miss getting mugged on Central Park West?
Yeah, exactly. Or walking your dogs? Exactly.
No, but I do miss the Second Avenue Deli. I miss the Lenox Lounge. I mean, do you know what are in those iconic places now? Urban Outfitters, a Starbucks.
There's a John Varvatos where CBGB's used to be.
Exactly.
New York's lost its soul.
What was that, Thomas?
Well, I was just agreeing with David that New York has lost its soul.
Since he returned from 3 months in Peru, he's decided to hate where he's from.
No, it's true. New York's most vibrant neighborhood at the moment is Philadelphia.
The others stare.
That's very funny, Thomas.
So, Ethan, I heard that you've commissioned Nick Bilton to write the biography on Evan DeReef.
Our mandate at Kenta is very simple. Bios on any haircut under 40 as long as they're still within their 15 minutes. Self-help, political rants, nobody reads fiction anymore.
Anyone's a writer. So cynical, Ethan Webb.
I know, that
right? Look, if I were a writer, we'd be having this conversation in a two-bedroom in Bushwick.
Oh, Bushwick is expensive now.
I'm serious. I'm really serious. I mean, most novelists these days, they don't earn enough money to support themselves.
True.
No matter how talented they are. That's why if Thomas came to me with the desire to be a writer, well, I'd talk him out of it.
So,
you're still tutoring, right?
Yeah, just for some extra cash.
He could be a Spanish teacher.
Yes, he could.
I don't know if I could be a Spanish teacher.
If he went back to college for a year, for some reason he refuses to do it. He lives on the Lower East Side without any direction. Only thing missing is an opium habit.
What about doing a smartphone application?
Daytime. In the city, a building sign reads, Leal Bar and Grill. A metal water tower stands on the roof of a high rise. The sun shines down on the Manhattan skyline. In a park, Thomas stands over a picnic table where two teens do homework. Smiling, he points at something in a textbook, then sits. Later, Thomas lounges on a fire escape reading a book. In a nightclub, a dancer in a flapper dress performs on stage with a jazz band. Thomas and Mimi lean on a balcony railing watching the show.
This man moved in across the hall from me. I don't know what he does or who he is, but he seems familiar to me. He's my new friend.
Aww.
Yeah. He asked about you.
Me? He knows me.
Thomas shrugs and nods. Glancing off, he spots Ethan getting into a booth with a dark-haired woman.
What's my father doing here?
Ethan speaks to a waitress as the woman settles into her seat.
Who's he with?
I don't know.
She's beautiful.
Mimi stares at them with a faint smile. On stage, the dancer shimmies out of the flapper dress, revealing a corset underneath. In their booth, Ethan leans close to the dark-haired woman's ear, whispering to her. The dancer gyrates. Thomas leans over the balcony railing as he watches his father. Ethan nuzzles the woman's neck. In an apartment, Thomas and Mimi sit on a couch.
Do you have any idea what this is going to do to my mother?
This doesn't mean your father loves you any less. Sorry.
That was bad.
That was...
I know, like dispensing therapy from an after school special.
He doesn't care about me to begin with, I know that. This is about my mother.
Yeah, but
it's their problem. You have your own problems.
Like what? Actually, don't. Don't answer that. Not now.
Thomas, look at me. Look, your parents, their world is nothing like ours. I mean, maybe it's their generation, or I don't know, this island. But you're kind. And you're real.
Leaning close to Thomas, Mimi locks eyes with him. He lightly cradles her cheek in his hand, and she smiles. Thomas kisses her. Mimi removes Thomas's hand from her cheek and moves away from him.
Look, you're young, and your defense mechanisms are strong, but I think that you want this. I really do.
I think that you're confused right now.
No, Mimi, I'm angry right now. I'm angry. Did you see that woman? Did you see how beautiful she was? I can never get a woman like that. My father with his publishing house and his good looks and his cheating fucking hair.
So what, you're gonna use your father's affair as a confirmation of your own inadequacies?
No.
Thomas walks off.
I have you for that.
In an upscale restaurant, he sits with Ethan.
So, call my office, you say you want to have lunch? You never want to have lunch. Figured you had a big surprise. Have you figured out your life?
No, definitely haven't figured out my life. I wanted to speak to you about
this. Thank you for those tickets.
Oh, of course, anytime.
Oh, she enjoyed the show, Judith.
It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great.
Great. Say hi to Judith.
I will indeed.
The friend leaves and Ethan faces Thomas.
I want you to move from the Lower East Side. Why do you insist in living in the farthest corner of Manhattan away from us? I think it's intentional. And it's almost hurtful. Look, I'm not asking for me. I'm asking for your mother. She wants you closer to home.
How is Mom?
Better, I guess. Can't get her to quit smoking.
Oh, she's fragile. Anything, even the smallest thing, could create another incident.
Ethan lowers his gaze.
I'll pay the difference in rent.
Outside, Ethan hails a cab.
What do you think about it?
Dad.
Oh, so I set up an appointment with a career counselor for you. My office will email you the info.
Dad, I know you're... I know...
You know what I want, Thomas.
I know you're just trying to help.
Don't blow it off, okay? I have to call in a favor for her to see you. She actually has a waiting list.
Ethan gets in the cab. Later.
Are you gonna confront your father?
Oh, trouble talking to him.
Why?
I don't think he likes me that much.
Thomas drinks.
What exactly is wrong with your mother?
I don't know, she's depressed, bipolar. She's depressive bipolar. She came from a broken home, so whenever anything threatens our perfect family, she completely unravels. Can't tell her. She'll be destroyed.
WF gives Thomas a joint.
Why don't you furnish this place?
I live in Brooklyn.
The older man lights it for him.
You have two apartments?
I'm rich. I'm a fucking duke.
Maybe he's been faithful all these years. Maybe she came out of him. I've seen her. She's irresistible. I mean,
stop. What do you want?
I want my father to stop seeing this woman.
No. In life. Well, in your life. You want more money? You want more respect? What is it that you want? Think about it. Really think about it.
Want to be better.
Better? Than what?
Staring off thoughtfully, Thomas nods.
And then?
A building reads, Kenta Webb.
In the 80s, Ethan was intoxicated by literary New York. But when he accepted that he lacked the talent to create a fictional family, he thought at least he could create a real one. Young Thomas loved to write. Ethan ignored this, wary of nurturing a life of rejections and evictions, and Thomas learned to keep his stories to himself. The intensity of Judith's bond with her son left Ethan feeling like a stranger in his own home. He sought refuge in work until publishing began its slow decline, and then came Johanna.
You know, private detectives get paid by the hour. So just wait to do exactly what we're doing right now. I mean, what is the difficulty in a stakeout?
From across the street, Mimi and Thomas spy on the building.
I really gotta go to class.
No, just wait, all right? Gonna be out in a minute. I have to see if he's gonna meet her again. Please, just wait.
Okay.
The dark-haired woman leaves the Kenta Webb office.
Oh my God, that's her. The other woman.
I'll call you later.
Wait, are we waiting for your dad?
I'll call you later.
Thomas leaves Mimi, who wears a rejected expression. The dark-haired woman struts down the busy sidewalk, and the bespectacled young man keeps up with her from a distance. Wearing sunglasses and a stylish gray coat, she descends into a subway station. On the platform, Thomas stands with his back to a column. Peering around the edge, he watches the woman board a train as others step off. Thomas gets in another car on the same train. Through a window, he watches the dark-haired woman sitting and reading. The reflection on the glass shows his steady gaze. The woman glances in his direction, and Thomas briefly steps out of view. Now, Thomas sits across the street from an outdoor cafe. He stares at the dark-haired woman, who sits at a table with two men. Holding a pen, she gestures as she flips through a thick document. She rests her cheek in her hand and smiles. Thomas gazes at her. Later, the woman walks past a large fountain. From a distance, Thomas follows her. An overhead view shows the fountain area and the long shadows of the people walking past. The dark-haired woman enters an apartment building, and the door closes behind her. Thomas pauses across the street, staring at the door. In WF's apartment.
What is it exactly that you want to accomplish?
I want to meet her and tell her to stop seeing my father. She could kill my mother.
Well, so do it.
WF sits on a windowsill.
I haven't built up the courage yet.
So you stalk her.
I shouldn't be dealing with this at all. I should be on a beach with Mimi, naked, in Croatia. We should be together.
Shoot is a dangerous word.
I'm serious, man. If it wasn't for my mother, I wouldn't be here.
WF puffs a cigar.
I don't buy it.
You don't buy what?
I don't buy that this is just about your mother's health. You want something more here.
Something more what?
Provocative.
Sitting on the floor, Thomas gazes up at the older man, then glances off. On a city street, the dark-haired woman strolls down the sidewalk. Thomas waits in a doorway until she passes, then approaches her.
Excuse me.
Yes.
You don't know who I am.
Yes, I do.
You do?
You're the boy who follows me.
Yeah, well, I have good reason.
You're also Ethan's son. He keeps a picture of you on his desk. Are you hungry, Thomas?
Now they sit in a restaurant. Thomas stares at the attractive woman. She brushes the hair from her eyes.
Following someone in this city is going to be very difficult. It's so easy to be anonymous here.
Why didn't you say anything when I was following you?
Why didn't you say anything?
Because I didn't know what I was going to do.
And do you now?
Yes.
Is it good? Johanna?
Johanna.
Yeah, I'm Johanna.
Okay, Johanna. How long have you been fucking my father?
Is that kind of vulgarity entirely necessary?
What kind of vulgarity would you prefer?
A little bit over a year.
Why are you even seeing him? He's married.
He is married.
Do you work with him?
Sometimes. I'm a freelance editor, so I work for all the houses.
Do you love him?
Define love, Thomas.
Do you think that you're gonna marry him? Is that the plan? You think you're gonna steal him away from my mother?
How do you know your mother isn't giving him to me?
What's that supposed to mean?
I mean that people do things all the time without realizing. Your mother may be giving me Ethan without comprehending it. I mean, you're doing something right now without realizing it.
Yeah, and what am I doing?
You're trying to make love to me.
I'm trying to make love to you. I'm trying to make love to you.
You just don't realize it.
At home, Judith searches a box.
Andy Warhol was a close personal friend, and he gave us that piece as a gift. And now this goddamn committee is going to take all that away.
Mom, it doesn't really matter.
These people, these non-entities in Chelsea, they're trying to steal my past. They're trying to erase my memories.
Mom. Where can I find the photo?
Oh, look at this mess. I need a cigarette. But your father has declared I'm no longer allowed to smoke in the house, so...
All right, well, I'll stay here and keep searching.
She saunters back.
Thomas, I want to smoke and talk to you at the same time. It makes the cigarette better.
Okay.
Thank you.
Judith smokes on the stoop.
It's just this perpetual cycle of expectations and disappointments. You know, the farthest distance in the world is between how it is and how you thought it was going to be. Don't forget that.
I won't.
You're my light, Thomas. You know? I don't know what I'd do without you. This Klonopin makes me so fucking emotional.
Thomas wipes a tear off his mother's cheek and rubs her back. Outside a fitness center, Johanna dons a sweatshirt.
Why don't you just stop seeing my father?
Oh, hello, Thomas.
Look, you're a very beautiful woman. You can get any man you want in this city.
Could I get you?
What?
If you said I can get any man in this city, so I'm asking. Can I get you? Which actually begs another question, really. Are you a man?
My mother's in a fragile state. This affair could put her over the top.
How am I responsible for your
fucking
mother?
My fault.
Okay, we know that crudeness doesn't make one a man.
Stop seeing him.
Nor do demands.
I'm not trying to be a man. I'm not trying to make love to you. I'm trying to save my mother.
You're getting closer.
She looks him up and down, then walks away. In her apartment, Johanna taps on her phone. She rubs her temple and stares off.
Johanna wasn't raised by writers. She was raised by bankers. But the lingua franca of both is fiction. When Ethan floated the idea of leaving his wife, she assumed it was just talk. But to her surprise, his suggestion unbalanced her. Instead of feeling flattered, she felt suddenly needy. Thomas's attention was the perfect remedy to her rattled confidence.
The visions of Johanna.
She's not like anyone I've ever met.
In a grocery store.
She said I was trying to make love to her.
Oh, were you?
No, I wanted to stop seeing my father.
Isn't that between you and your father? Why would you want to make contact with him? She's an outsider to what seems to me to be a family issue. Eat that.
WF feeds Thomas a sample.
Huh?
It's good. Who was it?
You don't want to know.
So what are you saying? I like dealing with her?
That's precisely what I'm saying.
And then I want to make love to her.
Would you like to make love to her?
No.
WF smirks and continues to shop.
What kind of a question is that? It's sick.
How is that sick?
It's sick.
She's a beautiful woman.
So?
Her name is Johanna.
She's sleeping with my father.
Would you like to make love to
her? Will you give me some credit, please? It's a conversation perverse.
Answer the question.
Give me some
Stop
credit.
Stop drowning yourself in what you think is moral. You want to fuck Johanna?
Grinning slightly, he locks eyes with Thomas.
Yes. I would.
You said your life was boring.
In the Pale Fire bookstore, Thomas wears a suit. Mimi approaches as he checks his watch. In the back seat of a cab, Mimi changes into a dress. She takes off her top, exposing her lacy bra. Thomas looks away and gestures to the front seat. The driver looks in the rearview mirror. Mimi finishes changing. In a lavish ballroom, the pair stands among a crowd.
I couldn't have handled today without you.
You know, I got hit on 3 times coming from the bathroom, and I'm pretty sure they were all married.
That's a good thing my father's in here.
It's not funny.
Oh, no.
Room's coming.
It's my ninja. It's my motherfucking ninja.
Congratulations,
thanks, man.
It's Mimi. Howard, nice
Congrats.
To meet you.
Listen, I've been running through Riverside Park every day, 9 miles, murdering sobriety. I've seen a lot of your mother lately, actually.
My mother?
Yeah, I don't know. She's always on the same bench reading a book. Erwin. Erwin! You guys gotta meet Erwin Sanders. He's buying the Knicks.
Howard. Hey. How does it feel being married?
Well, sex already sucks. Kidding. Kind of. Condé Nast took me back, actually, so maybe I could get an interview at some point?
Maybe. Howard, this is my friend, Johanna.
Thanks. This is Thomas.
Johanna.
Mimi.
Johanna and Thomas share a look. Later, Thomas watches Erwin and Johanna at the dinner table.
You're being really obvious.
He furrows his brow and keeps staring. Johanna catches his gaze, then looks away. Later, Thomas drinks alone at the edge of the party. Johanna walks up next to him.
I'm not dating Erwin. It's none of your business. I don't have to explain myself to you, but nonetheless, he's a very good friend.
She eyes him, then glances off.
Where's your girlfriend?
She's not. She's just a friend.
You shouldn't let her do that to you.
He nods and takes a swig.
He's 30 years older than you. He's a billionaire. I'm stupid.
You are quite stupid, Thomas. And you've got no idea how the world works. Actually, he's not a billionaire anymore because Nancy got half of everything.
Doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't. You look nice.
What?
You look very nice. In your suit. I don't really think you're stupid. Confused. Yeah.
Owen's probably looking for you. Should we pay for the whole night?
Oh, fuck you.
She storms off. Thomas follows her down an empty hallway to the entrance of an art gallery.
Hey.
So, first of all, hooker comments.
I'm not.
You actually resorted to hooker comments.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Second of all, Owen's gay. Okay, he loves men. In fact, he loves one man in particular, a man named Billy Arnaldi, who happens to be an incredible art dealer and one of my closest friends. So Erwin doesn't want to come out for business reasons, which is his prerogative, and I come to events like this with him. I'm not a glorified hooker. He's not a sugar daddy. I'm his beard. You really don't know how the world works. You're an innocent, Thomas. You're a child.
I know some things.
Oh, yeah?
Mm.
Like what?
How it went down. You, my dad, I know.
Do you?
Mm.
Okay, Thomas, Mr. Ace Sleuth. I want to hear it.
You noticed that he liked to come in early. Really early, like, what? 7 in the morning? So you started coming in then too, isolated and contained. Told him it was because you don't sleep well. That the bad dreams, they shake you awake before daylight. In the mornings, you put on music in your office. Brahms one day, Biggie Smalls the next, because, you know, you can't be put into a box. You attack all the senses. Even a little aggressive on your signature scent. Strong in the vanilla. You mention the boyfriend and complain of a bad date. You confuse him and make him wonder. The sex surprised you both. And he was just walking you home after dinner. And Jesus, you're not the other woman. He's not a cheating husband. No, this isn't something that we did. This is something that happened to us. But what? Could it be love? Well, nobody wants to acknowledge that so soon in the game, but the stars are crossed and people are gonna get hurt and we've done a bad, bad thing, Ethan, so fuck, it must be right. All of it was just bullshit, calculated and manipulated from that first lie about your bad dreams, because I'm pretty sure that you sleep like a baby.
You are quite the story.
He kisses her. She pulls him into a passionate embrace and they stumble against the wall. Thomas checks the hallway, then continues kissing Joanna. People mill about in the neighboring gallery. In the ballroom, wedding guests dance. Mimi stands alone. Thomas joins her, his tie slightly off-center.
Where have you been?
Bathroom. Thanks so much.
A bearded man runs to the stage and takes the microphone.
I have to interrupt now because I have to go home.
The guests exchange nervous looks.
I'm Uncle Buster.
Let's get out of here.
Casey's father's brother.
They haven't even cut the cake.
Fuck the cake.
Walter Oates.
Let's go.
Walter's not here because...
You smell like vanilla.
He's doing 2 to 5.
The bride hangs her head.
It's no secret. As you all know, 2 to 5 for doing the right thing. For believing in the poetry of the Constitution. I have only a few thoughts. Drama. The dramatics of marital romance. Staying together.
Judith reads in a park. It starts raining.
Like the gypsy told me, the poems written in lifelines are never guaranteed.
Thomas stands on a stoop.
They get busted up.
Joanna goes inside.
Tomorrow begins new poetry. Another romance that will explode from time to time. Poetry of married people like the Aurora Borealis.
Thomas follows Joanna inside.
Strewn like stars in the sky, and the drama of your lives begins.
Mimi leaves the bookstore.
Chapter after chapter. Stories, books, revolutions, as I know, will come. I've seen many, lived through them. They play in the least expected places, so get ready.
Thomas kisses Joanna.
Casey understands Howard. Howard knows Casey. No. No, not yet. There's always mystery. You both know that. You both know it isn't perfect. Excitement, trust, and struggle.
Thomas lies in bed with Joanna.
And the unknown privacies that keep us together. Glue of struggle.
Ethan takes Judith's hand, but she pulls away.
Raise my glass.
WF smokes on a roof.
A fragile glass we stomped on and shattered. And will forever be putting back together. The puzzles we first worked as children.
learning to be patient, searching for what fits.
At the wedding, a woman smiles faintly at the man beside her.
So many puzzles. So many books in this room.
Buster's smile wavers.
I talk too much. Let's dance.
Cut to black. Glimpses show a record player and Joanna and Thomas kissing on her couch. She straddles him, sitting on his lap. He slides a hand under her shirt.
So I have to go to this career counselor. My father set up the appointment.
Why don't you go into journalism? You ran the high school newspaper.
That doesn't interest me anymore.
And you won the advertising prize in college. You could do that.
How do you know this about me, huh?
Everything about you. Yearbook committee, president of the debate club, arts editor of the high school newspaper, second single on the tennis team. It's very impressive, Thomas. Your father has all your awards on his desk. That's so awful.
Oh, that's awkward. Fuck the career counselor.
They kiss.
All right, here's something you don't know. And nobody knows.
Okay.
I wanted to write. I used to write all these things when I was younger. A bunch of letters from my dog to, like, the mailman and the vet. And eventually, I came up with a collection of essays called Mary Jane Versus Everything, which I was incredibly proud of, and, you know, I showed them to my dad.
What did Ethan say?
Serviceable.
Ouch.
Yeah, serviceable. That was his exact word. Nothing special, just serviceable. He seemed pretty angry after reading them, though.
Well, I want to read them.
You do?
Yeah.
You can't.
Why not?
Because I threw them out.
Oh, that's so sad. So sad,
lonely. WF reads a manuscript.
That's good.
Really?
What word did your father use?
Serviceable.
I disagree. I think you've got talent.
Thomas nods faintly.
But your father's a publisher, and I'm just some strange neighbor, so you're gonna go with serviceable, huh?
The young man smiles.
Joanna wanted to read him.
Oh, right.
But I don't know if I could.
Those visions of Joanna.
I think about her all the time. Maybe it's love.
The older man raises his eyebrows.
Love is hard to determine. People think they're in love, and it's something completely different. Infatuation, the righting of childhood wrongs, companionship.
Have you ever been in love?
Yeah, once.
Who was she?
Oh, she was this woman I knew. She was taken by someone else, a dear friend. We had a profound connection, but she was his girl. It was a mess.
So what did you do?
Oh, I left the scene of the crime.
You ran away?
Oh, well, at the time I called it an adventure. But hindsight turned it into something else, which is what hindsight inevitably does. Yeah, I ran away. I'm gonna take this. Leave you with your heart on.
With my heart on?
Heart. Your heart on.
You know what? Maybe in hindsight, I'll feel guilty about Joanna, but right now I don't.
WF turns to Thomas, who shrugs.
It's not cut or dry.
Congratulations, Thomas. Your world is becoming contextual.
The older man waves the manuscript as he leaves.
Who the fuck are you?
Later, Thomas approaches the Kenta Webb building. He enters his father's private office.
Hey, Dad. What's up?
Sit down.
Thomas eyes him warily.
Is everything all right? Is Mom okay?
Sit down, Thomas.
Ethan sets his glasses down and stares at his son. The young man complies. Ethan looks at Thomas with a grave expression.
Is there anything you want to tell me?
No. No, nothing.
Mm-hmm. Anything I should know?
He tilts his head, and Thomas briefly averts his gaze.
No.
Thomas. You blew off the career counselor. I told you how hard it was to get that appointment, and then you just don't show up. It's gone.
Right, I should have called.
I should have called. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, too. Come work here. Work here. You like to read? I've been conflicted about giving you a job here, nepotism and all that bullshit, but screw it. You can start under the junior editors, you know, learn something.
No, thank you.
Why not? I mean, what's wrong with learning the publishing business?
Nothing. It's fine. It's just, it's serviceable.
Thomas glares at his father, who narrows his eyes. At WF's apartment.
WF? I just want to get my essays back. Hey.
Peeking through the doorway, Thomas looks around at the empty rooms. He steps inside, closing the door behind him. The young man spots something on a nearby desk and walks over. He moves a glass of wine off a piece of paper titled The Only Living Boy in New York by Julian Stellers. Thomas glances at the pages in the manuscript. He puts the glass of wine back and leaves. Walking through a dark corridor, he steps outside to a bright courtyard. WF sits on an old bench near a wall covered in graffiti. He holds a hand to his head. Thomas slowly approaches.
Thomas.
It's in your apartment. And Julian Stellers.
Oh, my nom de plume.
You've had 12 books published. You don't have much mass appeal, but you don't seem to mind. Hard to find a picture of you anywhere. You're an alcoholic who spends most afternoons drinking in the Brooklyn Inn. And you're probably the only person that I've met that's actually been to an opium den.
And I've been Googled.
Mm-hmm. I didn't read it. New manuscript?
Well, Thomas, I appreciate that.
Smoking a cigar, WF moves notebooks and a bottle. Thomas sits beside him.
You said I had talent.
It was a professional's opinion.
I don't know, man. We've experienced the world. I just live here in New York.
New York is the world.
I haven't done much with my life.
You've had sex with your father's mistress. I'd say that's something.
Am I the only living boy in New York?
The writer blows smoke and looks at the young man.
You are.
Thomas nods. At night, a glowing red hand blinks on a crosswalk signal. Thomas steps up to Joanna's apartment and presses a button on the intercom. Later, on the sidewalk, he talks on the phone.
Hey, I was outside your apartment. You're not there. I brought the essays I wanted to show you.
Thomas spots Joanna walking with Ethan. The couple descend steps near a building. Thomas lowers his phone, dumbfounded. He creeps to a window and looks into a basement restaurant where his father and Joanna sit in a large booth. The dark-haired woman rubs Ethan's face and he kisses her forehead. Stunned, Thomas walks away. Daytime. Inside the Pale Fire bookstore, Mimi restocks a shelf while Thomas peruses a display of cards. She eyes him briefly.
Did you sleep with her?
He looks up. They glance off.
With who?
Stepping over, she faces him from across the display.
Joanna? How would you ask that?
They left the wedding as quickly as we did. I may be oblivious, but I'm not stupid.
Why do you care?
I just do.
Why?
Thomas.
You jealous?
No.
You sure?
Thomas.
I think you're jealous.
Did you sleep with her?
She's my father's mistress. You think that I would do that?
No.
Thank you.
He continues browsing.
You're sweet. You're not like them.
Like who?
The city.
He looks at her. In her apartment, Joanna cuddles with Thomas in bed.
I want you to stop seeing him.
She moves away.
Come on, I'm putting my foot down.
You don't get to tell me what to do, Thomas. I don't care if your foot's down or up.
Why? Because you don't care about anything?
What?
You obviously don't care about anything at all.
So I'm a nihilist now, right?
I don't know anything about you. Where'd you grow up?
Brooklyn, Thomas. That's why I have this accent.
He smiles and moves to face her.
Do you play sports?
No.
He drapes his arm over her.
When did you first have sex?
Oh, my God. We're going to talk about my childhood now.
Yeah, I want to know you. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in London.
Which part?
Belsize Park. And then Kilburn.
Why the move?
Because Kilburn's so much more real.
What'd your dad do?
Joanna grabs a small case.
What'd your dad do?
He put a gun in his mouth and pulled the trigger.
She lights a cigarette, then settles back in bed. Staring at the ceiling, Thomas rubs his face.
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
He kisses Joanna's cheek, but she turns away.
Why do you sleep with me?
Because I like you.
What do you like about me?
He kisses her shoulder.
Your innocence.
I mean, you're innocent.
I forgot.
Come on, tell me. I want to know about when you're innocent.
Why?
Because I like the idea of it.
If you want someone so pure, why are you with me?
Because I care about you.
He nuzzles her nose and gazes at her.
Do you care about me?
She traces her thumb on his chin.
I don't care for anyone, remember?
But the truth was, she cared about them both. And that's when she knew this mess would only get worse. She had to make a clean break, starting with Ethan. What she didn't anticipate was he'd surrendered too much of his past to give up on his future.
At the table during a dinner party, Thomas watches his father end an angry phone call in the other room.
Los Angeles.
Sitting on a bench, Thomas and WF drink coffee.
You think he's in love with her?
He just has to stop.
You and your father, you suffer from the same disease.
Johanna.
Visions of Johanna conquer my mind.
Why are you writing about me?
That's what I do. I write about people I know and then give it a thin blend.
Why me?
Look, I got the apartment to get out of the house and write a completely different story. This didn't come across.
Mine did.
And like everything good, it happened by accident. I met you, now I got 118 pages.
WF smokes a cigar.
My father's publishing house, they're throwing an anniversary party tomorrow. You should come.
Oh.
You've heard all about these people, but you never met them. You're good for the book. Find a window. Pounce.
Pounce.
WF smiles to himself. Wearing sunglasses, he holds the cigar stub in his mouth and watches Thomas walk away. At night, Mimi looks down a street. A yellow cab pulls up and she gets in. She rides in the back seat with Thomas.
I broke up with Nick.
Did you?
She smiles softly at him. Thomas faces ahead.
You're supposed to be more excited than that.
In slow motion, the pair enters an elegant venue. Wearing a denim jacket over a short, glittery dress, Mimi leads Thomas past guests standing with drinks. A server carries sushi on a platter. Laughing, Judith touches Ethan's face. Greeting the young pair, Judith grins and kisses Mimi on the cheek. As Judith turns away, Mimi's smile fades. Thomas hugs his mom, then holds her hand and looks around the room. Through a window to a bar, he spots WF dressed in a blazer. The older man glances over. Downing his drink, he studies his reflection in a mirror as Thomas approaches.
Hey. Thanks for coming.
It's a great party.
Yeah, it always is.
It's my mother and Mimi.
WF glances over at the two women who laugh together.
She's beautiful.
I told you she was.
I was talking about your mother.
Thomas smiles. Huh? As the young man looks through the bar window, a waiter steps away, revealing Joanna. She plucks a champagne flute from a passing server's tray and walks off. Judith chats with guests.
It is amazing, but I think you
should. I want you to come meet someone.
Who are we meeting?
Meeting my new friend.
Your new friend? All right,
I'll do that. Thomas leads Judith to the crowded bar and finds WF gone.
He was just here.
He was?
No. Oh. There's him. He was just
a bartender takes WF's empty glass from the counter. On a balcony, Joanna smokes a cigarette. She gazes off as blurry headlights move through the traffic below.
I look down upon the city from high windows.
Holding a drink, WF joins her.
It is then that the great buildings lose reality and take on their magical powers. Squares and squares of flame set and cut into the ether. Here's our poetry.
For we have pulled down the stars to our will.
To our will.
Ezra Pound.
Johanna, I'm not sure.
We haven't met, have we?
No, but I know you very well. And I know that you're having your fun. And that he's young and easy. But you'll have me to deal with if he scars.
He stands close to Joanna and grips her hand.
I don't like strange conversations. So I'm gonna walk away.
She pulls her hand away and leaves. WF watches her go. He runs a hand through his gray hair. Inside, Joanna returns to the party. She turns a corner and spots Thomas ahead. The young man keeps his eyes fixed on her as she strides past him. Thomas follows Joanna to a secluded part of an upstairs lounge area. He leans close to her. She glances at people sitting nearby. He backs up.
I was ending it with your father as well. And not because I didn't care for him. I actually really do. I care for him very much. Thomas, the thing is, he proposed.
Right.
And I've said yes.
No. No.
Please,
no, no,
I don't
no.
want this to be disruptive.
Stop. He's not going to leave her. I'm not going to let that happen.
Thing for everybody.
For whom?
For everybody. Judith's gonna be so much better off. She won't be suffering anymore under the weight of a dead marriage.
He's going through a crisis. He's just going through a fucking crisis. That's all it says.
This doesn't have to be this difficult. Please, everybody can win here.
God made a mistake when he made you beautiful.
Well, God's mistake is marrying your father.
Not yet, she isn't.
Look, can I just ask you one thing? If any of this comes out, who do you think's gonna get hurt? It's not me. It's not Ethan. We've been allowed to land on our feet, and it's not you. You're so young. There's one person. One person will be destroyed, and we both know who that is.
What do you think is going to happen? You think you can get married? You think you can have the obligatory second family and live happily ever after in your dream world? What do you think?
Obviously that can't happen.
What is that supposed to mean?
She hesitates, then tries to go.
What is that supposed to mean? What is it supposed to mean?
Stop it.
Thomas leans his face close to Joanna's and she grabs his arm.
Stop it, Thomas.
I'm gonna tell him everything.
The young man finds his father on a landing with his back turned. Judith climbs up the stairs and smiles at Thomas. She turns to her husband. Breathing heavily, Thomas hesitates. He looks back at Joanna, who shakes her head and mouths words to him. Facing his parents, Thomas winces in frustration, then walks off. As Joanna watches him go, Mimi steps into view and glances between them. On the landing, Ethan speaks into a microphone. In the room below, the guests listen attentively. He kisses Judith's cheek. They both raise their glasses. Outside, Thomas turns a corner and walks down an alley. Mimi follows him through the rain.
Thomas!
He glances back, then stops.
Thomas, what are you doing?
It's raining.
He nods at her. Mimi looks toward the sky.
Okay.
Facing Thomas, she hesitates.
I broke up with Nick. I got into Croatia, and I want you to come with me.
Standing inches from Thomas, she looks up at him.
I slept with Joanna.
No, you're not like that.
And I thought that I was in love with her.
You're good.
Thomas shakes his head.
No, Mimi, I'm not good.
She turns and walks toward the street.
Mimi!
Thomas follows her.
Mimi!
Stopping, she faces him and shrugs. Rain drenches their hair and clothes.
I'm sorry.
You are just like them. They won, Thomas. God, they fucking bankrupted you.
She walks away. Mimi hails a taxi and gets in. Thomas watches it drive away, then wanders off. Later, he strides down an empty sidewalk. In slow motion, he turns up his collar against the heavy rain. Thomas enters a building, then slowly opens the door to a room. He steps into the dark bedroom, where model planes hang from the high ceiling. Closing the door behind him, he sets his glasses on the nightstand and takes off his blazer.
I've got nothing to do today but smile.
Wearing only his boxers, he climbs into bed and lies under the blue checkered blanket. Thomas falls asleep with the model planes hanging above him. Cut to black. In the morning, Judith reads a newspaper in the kitchen. Her son enters.
Hey.
Thomas, did you spend last night here?
Yeah.
Well, that was the best party that Kenta has thrown in years. Everybody was drunk, and not just our alcoholic friends, but everybody. Why did you spend the night?
I don't know, I just wanted to come home.
He pours a glass of orange juice.
Are you upset? Tell me about it.
Without looking up, Thomas gulps the juice.
What? Is it about a girl? And I'm your mother, so...
He shakes his head.
Things have gotten messy, and I want to bail. But I can't.
Well, then you know. The only way out is through. Right?
He nods.
Where's Dad?
He left early. He said he had to go to the office and get some files. He seems to have gotten over what...
Judith finds her son gone. Now, Thomas enters the Kenta Webb office building. Inside, he climbs a spiral staircase. He reaches a landing and walks forward. Through an open doorway behind him, Joanna spots the young man.
Thomas?
He glances back at her, then runs away. Joanna follows up the spiral staircase and into Ethan's private office.
Dad?
Thomas.
We need to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things that
Thomas,
you don't know.
Don't.
That you need to know.
Ethan takes off his glasses.
Joanna. You two know each other?
Yeah.
He stands from his desk.
What?
Well, Ethan, the thing is that he followed me.
You followed her?
That's not all I did.
Working his jaw, Ethan glances between the nervous pair.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Thomas hesitates and gives a rueful smile.
We slept together. And not just once. What?
A tear falls down Joanna's face. She turns away. Sighing, Ethan nods. He glares at the young man, then grabs him by the collar.
You slick little shit! I did right by you!
Oh God.
You have no idea! You have no idea!
Trembling, Ethan shakes Thomas. With tears in his eyes, he loosens his grip and pats the young man's chest.
Oh.
Ethan's chin quivers. He touches Thomas's face. He pats the young man's chest again and backs away. Facing Joanna, Ethan cups her cheek. She places her hand over his.
I deserve you.
They press their foreheads together. Fighting back tears, Joanna holds his hand to her chest. He breaks away and steps slowly past Thomas, who shifts uncertainly.
Oh.
Ethan leaves. With her arms crossed, Joanna faces the window.
I'm sorry.
We're all sorry, Thomas. I really do love him.
Breathing unsteadily, Thomas nods. Joanna goes to a table with framed photos and picks one up.
And he did right by you. More than you know.
She hands him a framed newspaper clipping. Joanna leaves. The article features a photo of Thomas playing tennis. In the stands behind him, WF sits among the spectators. A glimpse shows Thomas running down a sidewalk. In Ethan's office, he slips the newspaper clipping from its frame and focuses on WF's face in the grainy, black-and-white picture. On the sidewalk, he runs under scaffolding. Now, he knocks on WF's apartment door. He tries to open the door, but it doesn't budge. On the fire escape, he crouches outside the window and peers into the bare apartment. He spots an ashtray bearing the words Brooklyn Inn. He goes. Now, Thomas jogs across the street. Over a doorway, letters read Brooklyn Inn. Inside, WF sits at the bar. Thomas joins him.
Did you finish it?
WF turns and smiles.
I did. Tell me about it.
Thomas puts the newspaper photo on the bar and WF unfolds it.
Tell me about the only living boy in New York.
Well.
He raises his glass toward the bartender and drains it.
It's about three people, artists, and great friends. One of them is a beautiful young girl, the other two. One artist has talent, the other doesn't. No matter how hard he tries, no matter how badly he wants it, he just... Well, he wasn't kissed by God in that way.
But he has the girl.
Yes, and they're married, and they plan to start a family. Only they have a little problem.
He's infertile. And he asked a talented friend for help.
Yeah, you have a knack for a story, Thomas.
I get it from my father.
WF smiles at Thomas, then looks down.
So, they're artists, and they don't want to use in vitro, so they go with a cheap bottle of Cabernet, and some Quaaludes, and Simon and Garfunkel record.
And the husband's okay with that?
Well, they want to use somebody that they know, somebody that they love. And of course, the artist with the talent, he's flattered, and of course he agrees. And he and the beautiful girl, they walk the city streets that night for hours. They're both so damn nervous. And they end up at Washington Square Park, where they dance. To no music.
Raising his glass, he finishes another drink.
And the rest comes easy.
Does he love her?
He does. In that moment, he realizes he does.
They both stare downward.
So it turns out that the beautiful girl, she gives birth to a wonderful son, and her husband gives up art, becomes a very successful art dealer.
And the other artist?
They lock eyes.
He watches the boy grow from afar, Sees his own talent alive in this child.
WF gazes at Thomas.
So desperately wants to connect with the son. And tell them everything.
The young man's eyes glisten.
Murder is down.
WF stifles his sobs. Straightening his posture, he shrugs and raises his drink.
But of course, he never does make contact.
He picks up the newspaper clipping.
Until he decides to make it all his next book.
Thomas nods. He smiles gently at WF, who gazes back at him. Thomas puts his arm around his father and pulls him close. An aerial view shows the city skyline at sunset. Thomas approaches his parents' building. Inside, he finds Judith smoking a cigarette at the dining table.
Mom.
She stares ahead with red-rimmed eyes. A liquor bottle and glass rest on the table. Thomas studies his mother.
Thomas.
What did he tell you?
Everything. You here looking for razors? Empty pill bottles?
He flashes a grin.
Sit down.
Thomas takes a seat.
What do you know, Thomas?
He takes his mom's hand.
I know why you carry so much guilt. I know that I already forgive you. I know you're in love with someone you haven't seen in over 25 years. And you go to Riverside Park every day to read his books. I know, and it's okay.
Judith wears a stunned look. Her eyes glisten.
Who told you?
He did. Julian, WF, whatever you want to call him.
Is he dying?
He's not dying. Don't worry, he's not dying. He's fine. He's just, I don't know, he's tired. I think he's lonely.
It was my idea not to tell you, not Ethan's. You have to know that.
Okay. You're trying to protect me.
Yes, and I knew that if you found out, he would come back into my life and then everything would go to shit.
Well, everything went to shit on its own, so.
Yeah, I guess.
With a half smile, Judith watches Thomas. She picks up her drink and fidgets with her short hair.
Is he old?
Thomas nods.
And he's messy.
Yeah, he always was. An unmade bed of a man.
An unmade bed of a man. I like that.
You should. Your father wrote it.
Judith sips her drink. Thomas kisses her hand. She grips both of his hands and smiles. Cut to black. 1 year later, an aerial view shows Central Park nestled among the buildings of Manhattan. Glimpses show a gently rippling pond and autumn foliage next to skyscrapers. In the Pale Fire bookstore, Thomas reads a rejection letter from Penguin Group. He keeps his gaze fixed on the letter.
You're closed. I'm sorry, I thought I locked the door.
He looks up to find Ethan, who wears a calm expression. Thomas shifts nervously.
Hey. I'll be quick. I know what book I want.
Sure.
Ethan grabs a copy of The Only Living Boy in New York by Julian Stellars.
What'd you think?
Thomas shrugs and grins.
Serviceable? You're lying to make me feel good.
Character that surprised me the most was the father.
Ethan meets his gaze.
Which one?
One that didn't run away.
Wearing an emotional look, Ethan nods. Later, they walk in a park.
Whatever happened to Mimi?
She's still in Croatia. She got a fellowship. I don't think she's coming back.
Did you hear back from Viking?
Yeah, it was a pass.
I'm sorry. You want me to make a few phone calls?
No. I want to start something new. I have an idea.
Well, that's good.
You still speaking to John?
No.
You lying to me?
Yeah. How's your mother?
She's good. She's quit smoking. Started writing for Art News again.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. She has a date tonight.
Oh, good for her.
Thomas eyes him.
Truly.
A glimpse shows the new book.
Black old conviction will burst her full with passion and intensity. Yates said that, but so did Lou Reed.
Thomas arrives at a small gallery where W.F. reads to an audience. Pausing, W.F. smiles at Judith, who gazes back fondly from the front row. Standing in a wide doorway, Thomas wears a contented look as he listens to the writer. A view from the dark street outside the gallery shows the reading through a window. Cut to black. When I wake up in the morning, credits appear, directed by Mark Webb, written by Alan Loeb, produced by Albert Berger and Ron Yerxa, executive producers Jeff Bridges, Mari Jo Winkler Iofreda, John Fogel, director of photography Stuart Dreiberg, ASC, production designer David Grotman, editor Tim Strito, ACE, costume designers Michelle Matland, Anne Roth, music by Rob Simonson. Music supervisors Randall Poster, Megan Currier. Casting by Kim Davis Wagner, CSA, and Justine Arteta, CSA. Callum Turner. Kate Beckinsale. Pierce Brosnan. Cynthia Nixon. Kiersey Clemens. William John Camp. And Jeff Bridges. Wallace Shawn, Tate Donovan, Debbie Mazar, John Bolger, Ben Hollinsworth, An Duong, an Amazon Studios presentation, a Bonafide production, a Mark Webb film, produced in association with Big Indie. Credits roll. Unit Production Manager, Mari Jo Winkler Iofreda. First Assistant Director, Joseph Reedy. Second Assistant Director, John Silvestri. Co-producer, Joseph Reedy. Cast, Callum Turner as Thomas Webb. Jeff Bridges as W.F. Gerald. Kate Beckinsale as Joanna. Pierce Brosnan as Ethan Webb. Cynthia Nixon as Judith Webb. Kiersey Clemens as Mimi Pastori. Tate Donovan as George. Wallace Shawn as David. An Duong as Barbara. Debbie Mazar as Anna. Ben Hollinsworth as Ari. John Bolger as Erwin Sanders. William John Camp as Uncle Buster. Richard Beckins as prominent New Yorker. Ryan Speakman as gay couple number one. Oliver Thornton as gay couple number two. Alexander Sokovikov as taxi driver. Ed Jewett as Ed. Amy Hone as Amy. James Saito as James. Adam Siegel as Adam. Madhur Jaffrey as Madhur. Peter Francis James as Peter. James M. Ryan as antique store owner. Lily Moran as cafe waitress. Jody Lee Bradley as ticket booth worker. Jeffrey M. Marchetti as subway passenger. Mieta Gornall as dancer stretching number one. Andres Acosta as dancer stretching number two. Brandon Hudson as dancer stretching number three. Brianna Cohn as dancer stretching number four. Robin Williams as dancer stretching number five. Pre-record singers, Marcus Farrar, Johnny Gale, Christine Ullman. Lip syncers, Shavy Brown, Amira Kindle, Eden Orshan, Lucas Shine. Stunt coordinator, Blaze Corrigan. WF stand-in, stunt double, Lloyd Catlett. Crew, production supervisor, Samantha Kreitzer-Dyer. Assistant unit production manager, Kip Davis-Myers. Production coordinator, Cameron Amstater. Assistant production coordinator, Olivia Del Campo. Production secretary, Rebecca Bonardi. Office PA, Austin Adams. Office PA, Giovanni Machen. Office PA, Catherine E. Conop. Script Supervisor, John Paul Trekkie. Second Assistant Director, Rachel Jaros. DGA Trainee, Nick DuVarney. Camera Operator, Stuart Dryberg. B Camera Operator, Steadicam, Tom Wills. A Camera First AC, Stanley Fernandez. B Camera First AC, Malcolm Purnell. A Camera Second AC, Christopher Eng. A Camera Second AC, Half Acosta. B Camera Second AC, Chris Enos. Camera Loader, Dave J. Ross. Additional Camera Loader, Daniel Cardenas. Additional Camera Loader, Tommy Scoggins. Still Photographer, Nico Tavernis. Video Assist, Devin Donegan. Music: La Paloma Azul, Live, written by Dave Brubeck, performed by Dave Brubeck Quartet. Blues Run the Game, written by Jackson C. Frank, performed by Simon and Garfunkel. Peace Piece, written by Bill Evans, performed by Bill Evans. Maiden Voyage, written by Herbie Hancock, performed by Herbie Hancock. Tonight at Noon, written by Charles Mingus, performed by Charles Mingus. Oysters, written by Benji Hughes, performed by Michelle Indigiocello. Perfect Day, written by Lou Reed, performed by Lou Reed. Tanga, written by Mario Bautza, performed by Machito. Be My Baby, written by Jeff Berry, Ellie Greenwich, Phil Spector, performed by Christine Ullman and Johnny Gale. Wider Shade of Pale, written by Gary Brooker, Matthew Fisher, Keith Reed, performed by Marcus Farrar. The Only Living Boy in New York, written by Paul Simon, performed by Simon and Garfunkel. Visions of Johanna, Alternate Take, written by Bob Dylan, performed by Bob Dylan. All We Ever Knew, written by Kenny Hensley, Josiah Johnson, Jonathan Russell, Charity Rose Thielen, Tyler Williams, Chris Zashi, performed by The Head and the Heart. The story, characters, and events depicted in this motion picture are fictitious. Any similarity to places, buildings, actual persons, living or dead, or to actual events is purely coincidental. Ownership of this motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and all other countries throughout the world. All rights reserved. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this film or any part thereof, including soundtrack, is an infringement of the relevant copyright and will subject the infringer to severe civil and criminal penalties. Copyright 2017 Amazon Content Services, LLC. First publication of this motion picture, sound recording, and film. United States of America, 2017, Amazon Content Services, LLC, is the owner of the copyright in this motion picture. This motion picture is protected under the copyright laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH. Bonafide Productions. The Only Living Boy in New York. Big Indie. Amazon Studios.